today's Focus Corner, we actually have a sponsor, the Sedona Tap House. I don't know if you've ever been there, but they take care of the Wahoos. So we'd love it if you come in, check out. They've got the bars open now. The bar stool is open at the bar. You can come in and order. They have their charity meals now. If you haven't heard of that, they usually every day they have a couple of things. I think this month they're featuring a steak and a salmon. It's only $8 or $10, and the profits go to Start a Spark of Central Virginia, which is an organization that supplies firewood for those in need during the winter. So we talked to Sedona and they were like, we barely made it through quarantine, like just to reopen. They had to take loans. They thought about shutting down the business, and we love Sedona. So we wanted to give them a very, very special shout out. If you're thinking about going out to eat, thinking about ordering something, please check out Sedona. They definitely will take care of you. Tell them Locker Room Access sent you, Phony Bennett sent you, and they'll absolutely take care of you. Have you been there before, Phony? What is there?
I have not. My recent visits to Seville have mainly just been to games, not a lot of
We're gonna make a special trip out there. I know Jay Willie loves it. I know Mark loves it. We always, talk about going there. It's 1035 Millmont Street, Charlottesville, Virginia. Jump in there. You can order online. You can do all the things. You can eat in as well now. They have eat in. They have, if you're not vaccinated, you don't want to wear a mask, you can eat outside. You can sit at the bar, go to happy hour, get a drink, support local business. That's all we want to do here. And for this month, we're doing all free advertising across the board. So if you have a business, you're part of Charlottesville, you love the Hoos, you listen to us, hit us up. info@lockerroomaccess.com. We want to highlight all of those in need. And I know Sedona really struggled during quarantine. So if you have the means, you're thinking about going out to eat, Sedona Tap House. So there we go. Appreciate them. All right. So today, Phony Bennett, we are missing a couple of guys. Dougie Fresh last minute had something. Mark ended up having a coaching thing. So it's me and you, but we have a really special guest today. Founder of the Saber. Actually just met him for the first time yesterday. Great guy. Mike Ingles, thank you for joining the podcast. We're going to get to your story here shortly, but thank you for joining us today.
All right. Thank you, TW.
So I was going to jump into just a couple of Virginia stuff. Phony, how are you doing overall?
Good. And news is quiet, so I'm waiting for something to happen. We got like little football news today, stuff like that. But this is kind of my off period of the year. I kind of lay low and just enjoy the silence for a little bit.
Yeah, the latest update in the basketball front, the Legends Classic, they added Providence. They did not have UCLA, which is sad because I know Hav wanted to see Kihei versus Kihei for that point guard matchup. But it is what it is. It's a long trip for UCLA. We were supposed to go there last year and that didn't happen. Now
UCLA canceled so they could play Gonzaga, so they could reschedule that. And like I get that. That's early season. So there was some lively debate, I think, on the Saber about that matchup.
So that brings about Georgia versus UVA for right out of the gate. We could see a transfer, Jabri's revenge on Virginia. What are your thoughts? How do you feel about that?
I mean, our other two guys are on ACC teams, so we were already guaranteed to see them next year. Now we're going to see Jabri. That's going to be weird. As far as the matchup, I don't really know a lot about Georgia. I mean, playing a player that just transferred, though, I mean, I think that's exciting.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Mike, what are your thoughts? Have you looked into Georgia at all?
No, I haven't had a chance to really kind of keep up with that as of late. But, with my interaction with you guys, my finger's going to be a little bit more on the pulse moving forward.
That's going to be fun. Maybe we'll do some live. We're talking about having a meetup before, figuring out how we can all meet up before that game or something. That'll be fun. The next one, NBA playoffs. Have you been watching Joey Hoops take over the Brooklyn Nets?
Mike? Oh, you're talking to me or Chris?
Yeah, Mike.
Oh, yeah. I did watch Joey destroy the that game the other day. And man, did he, I mean, it reminds me of those days at UVA. And what really surprised me is not how talented he is. We always knew that he had that kind of talent, but for him to get the shots when you have that big three already there, you know, those guys that he's playing with are used to being the primetime player for each respective team that they had. For them all be on there and still look for Joey and actually, you know, set up plays for him is pretty remarkable, because they could just take their shots if they wanted to and just, you know, leave Joey to pick up the crumbs. But they treat him as just like any other top level player. And man, is he's really starting to shine.
Yeah, he had 25 the other night. It was
22 really, in the first half.
He was really
16 in the first, 7 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, it was ridiculous. Every shot was going in. He was getting rebounds. He was getting steals. I'm like, man, is there anybody else on the team right now?
I mean, you see why he stayed there. It's like these guys draw the defense in and kick it out to him, and he's just got to make open shots. It's amazing.
But don't forget, he was there first. Then they added all these other guys.
Right.
To get him.
Well, and that had to be concerning for Joe when you think about that. It's because, like, oh, well, they're adding more talent. When am I going to get my time? Right. And, man, I tell you, it's really special to see that happening. I'm not going to, you know, I'll be a Nets fan now, but I'm a Philly fan. I have been since the Dr. J years, and they're good, but I don't think they're good enough to beat the Nets right now. I mean, they just don't have the defense to stop them, I don't think. The people are saying the Nets might, you know, might struggle, but I don't know. I think it might be the other way around.
And
I'm just so excited to have somebody who's in the playoffs.
Yeah, Phone, are you watching the NBA like that right now, the playoffs?
I keep turning on games just because there's who's in it, which is like a new experience for me. And to actually see them playing important minutes. I watched a little bit of Dre last night. I think he started off pretty well, and then the team kind of struggled down the stretch. And then I haven't seen Mamadi in the postseason yet, but I mean, we got three guys. Is that it?
AG is also with the
– Right, with the Wizards, right?
So, well, and then is Mike Scott still? I should know this, but Mike I don't.
Scott's still with the Sixers,
but is he? He's just not getting time.
Yeah, he still gets some time. He gets some time. Yeah.
It's sad to say I've watched more of the Nets than I have the Sixers this playoff so far. So.
Yeah, so we got a few who's in there. Ty and Kyle didn't make it, but there's always next year.
Yeah.
Dre in that game, he had a good game. He came out of the gate, I think, similar to Joe. He had, I think, a few threes in a row. And then
did you see the stat line on Amamadi from last night?
Yeah.
It actually got, what was he? I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it was something like, was it 13 points, 7 rebounds? And, I mean, he hit almost every single one of the columns for stats.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's impressive. I love Amamadi. Who doesn't love Amamadi? I mean, the kid is just amazing talent. And I think he's got so much more room to grow, which is scary. Not grow in terms of height, but grow in terms of his game.
Yeah.
So
he's still young as a basketball player. That's the thing I think people forget. Yes, he played at UVA for 5 years, but he still is very young in the game. So we're looking forward to that. We had his coach on from high school. And he said the same thing. He was just like, "Oh yeah, he's just scratching the surface in terms of what he can do," which was really cool. The other thing I was going to update: Jay Willie, recent post talking about he had a recent health scare, but everything's good now. He's home. He's a little tired, but he's recovering. So I'm happy to see that. He went to see his son playing in AAU and Junior Burrow and Cornell and the whole crew. Corey was all there cheering him on. So it was pretty good stuff there. So happy. Shout out to Jay Willie.
Yeah, that was an awesome picture. I think there were, I mean, was it five of them?
Yeah, Cornell. Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah.
So then the last thing we wanted to get into, we just wanted to talk to you, Mike, about the stuff that we talked about yesterday, launching the Saber. What was the, you know, the Saber is now like a fabric of Virginia sports, but how did tell us about the, how did that start? Like what made you get into what Virginia sports entertainment, I guess you could call it. I don't even know what you call it.
How many hours is this podcast? No, I'm just kidding. I'll try to be as concise as I can. A lot more concise in writing than I am with speaking. I got, you know, and about 4,000 words or less, I can tell you 10 minutes of information. No. but the groundwork of it was set in a way that I was active duty military for about 6 years, 1984 to 1990. And Virginia football at that point had started to really grow under George Welsh, first bowl game in 83, which I missed because I was in basic training. And so with my time overseas and in, you know, Texas and Kansas, I couldn't keep up with the Hoos at all. And just newspaper clippings, things like that. And it was pretty frustrating. So as web technology got better and better, I wanted to find a way to learn how to design websites. And my roommate at the time says, "Hey, man, you love UVA sports. Why don't you do something about that?" The site really was just a promotion for Tiki Barber for the Heisman. Tiki and I had talked about it. He gave me approval to go ahead and do it, which, you know, of course he would, right? And all I did was do Tiki stats and updates on Tiki and things like that to help, you know, in terms of the web, promote him a little bit more and get his name out there for people who didn't know. And, you know, I shut it down and, you know, a few months went by and I started getting a bunch of emails asking, "Hey, are you going to do something like this next year?" And so I was working three jobs at the time and going to PVCC. So I dropped two of the jobs and spent 3 months building virginiafootball.com and then inevitably virginiabasketball.com. And then not long after, we added message boards, which, you know, our friend Tim McDaniels helped me build that. And then it just took off from there. Eventually we combined the two entities, Virginia basketball and virginiafootball.com into one, which is the Sabre. 1998, we got press credentials, full press credentials. One of the first independent collegiate sports websites ever to get that, which took some doing. Took about a year to get that in place. And it just took off from there. And it just, I think the... We were first in, which really helped, I think. But I think our dedication to the fan base and feedback, you know, welcome feedback. What do you want to do? What do you like? Okay, we'll do more of that. I think that's what really had the site grow. And also we stayed true to UVA. I didn't do anything in the gray area with recruiting that might hurt the school. And I think we earned not only the trust of UVA and the coaches, staff and the players, but we earned the trust and loyalty of the fans, and you can't buy that.
Yeah. Phony, how often back in the day would you go to the Sabre? When did you first discover the Sabre as a fan?
Yeah, I discovered the Sabre pretty early on, and I don't even know years ago if I had an account. Then there were a few years, maybe the Lato years, that I probably wasn't visiting message boards at all. Like, I may have not have read a single post after his first season.
Good idea.
And then I came back and I finally made an account once the Twitter thing started going. But it's always been, I mean, it's a daily read for me. I don't post that often because I don't have that much to say, but I really enjoy reading the other thoughts and stuff. I mean, that's the central place for Virginia basketball discussion.
Yeah, it's a very active and lively community. I mean, and I know from experience, I know like Mark and others, Jay Willie and others have spoke that they don't like it. They don't go on it because it's too much for them to see that. And it makes sense. Like if you're a family or a player or of that, if you're that close to the program, it's I can see it being difficult because a lot of people go on the Sabre and vent. But for the most part, it is an active community. It's amazing.
And people have to be cognizant of who's reading it. But I mean, I suppose it's an ethical question of whether you should still post it. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Mike, with people criticizing players and stuff like that with coaches and families reading it?
Yeah, actually, I got a couple of stories about that. Two Virginia quarterbacks. I don't know if you remember Dan Ellis and Matt Schaub. I knew their families really well because I went up to the Big 33 when they were playing as seniors. You know, the Pennsylvania versus the Ohio Big 33 is huge, huge, you know, I guess postseason all-star game. And so I got to know their families really well. And you know, Well, first, let me let you know my thoughts on, you know, the criticism. That was one of the battles I always had with that. And there were people at times that would label me bored Nazi because I would come down on them so hard. And I told people, look, there's a right way to be critical in your thinking and what you're saying. You can say something like, hey, Matt Schaub had a bad game. I think if he did this, it would be better. But saying something like Matt Schaub should lose his scholarship because he had a bad game, right, that would put somebody in jeopardy of losing an account if they keep it up. And it got so bad at one point during the London era that I had to start permanently banning Saber Edge subscribers. And that hurt. These were people that followed me since I was posting on message boards on AOL back in 1996 and 97. They were the heart and the beginning of the site. They were the ones that helped bring other people in. And for me to have to kick those people off, it was painful. But you have to maintain some level of civility when running these. And being that I had full press credentials, the last thing I wanted to do was get on the bad side of UVA coaches, players, and the administration. So, you know, I wasn't a voice for the administration, but I understood their point of view. And, you know, it's not healthy for the fans to attack players or attack coaches. They're just out there trying to do their jobs, and they want the best for their own team. So why not just support them? And if you don't have anything nice, don't say anything at all, you know? And so it was a battle. I almost quit running the site several times because of the animosity and the infighting that was happening. It's tough to maintain when you have 1,000 or 2,000 fans, not so hard, but when you have 30,000 registered subscribers to the message board, and you have an influx of rival fans coming in just to mess everything up, it's hard to manage. It really is.
Yeah, I could totally. All right. Pop question, the most controversial player since Kihei on your message boards? Because I would say right now, as far as basketball go, it's all the
ones on both sides. You know, I will have to, well, does it have to be basketball or can it be football? Because this will lead me back into full circle what I was talking about Ellis and Schaub. Dan Ellis, hands down. Dan Ellis had a lot of mental skill, but he didn't have the physical skill. And everybody knew about Aaron Brooks and, oh, could he be the next great guy and all that. So nobody wanted to see Dan Ellis on the field. All they cared about was Aaron Brooks, but he just simply wasn't ready. He was still growing even in his junior year, still making mistakes on the field. So Dan Ellis was the best hope. And let me tell you something about quarterback culture. And I bet your point guards have the same thing. I bet you Kihei feels the same way. They see the criticism as a motivating factor. They don't let it break their confidence. And if it does, they're not right. They're not right for the job anyway, or for that role. But Dan Ellis's mom would read the bad stuff on the message boards, and Matt Schaub as well. Matt Schaub's sophomore year was, it was hard to read the message boards. And what I would tell them is, hey, I'm really sorry. I'll try to keep this contained as much as possible. But they're quarterbacks. They are the leader of the team. If they have a difficult game, there's going to be a lot of response to that. You got to let it roll off your back like water off a duck's back. And by the time Matt was a senior, Debbie Schaub, his mother, said, Mike, that was the best advice I ever got from anyone. It really saved me a lot of stress. And when I talked to Matt about it or Dan about it, he says, man, don't worry about that stuff, man. It doesn't affect us. You know, we're quarterbacks. We're built to take that. And it was good to hear that maturity from guys that are, you know, 19, 20 years old. Yeah. All that weight on their shoulders, all that criticism, you know, they had plenty of places they could have gone to play football, but they chose UVA. And for them to get that backlash had to feel like a slap in the face, but they didn't take it that way. And it impressed me. It, you know, it certainly let me know what the kind of mentality and mental toughness you have to play at that level. You can't let it get you down. So hopefully, I haven't talked to Kihei. Hopefully he feels the same way. I mean, he's got to know, he and the team know how good he is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Him, yeah, and him. I would say for every Kihei hater, there's a Kihei lover as well. I mean, I haven't seen a play. I mean, he splits the fans so much, and I think it's interesting. And hopefully he's using that as motivation. And
he can't help but see it, especially on Twitter and stuff when people are, you know, tagging him or whatever, Instagram tagging him and commenting and stuff. It's got to be. I mean, you can't ignore it at this point, at this day and age. They can ignore the Saber stuff, but like now, it just bleeds into Twitter and Facebook and
Instagram. Yeah, you know, you're right. You're right.
Everywhere else.
Yeah, the message boards back then were the social media platforms. Yeah. There wasn't a Twitter. Heck, there wasn't even a MySpace yet.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't this free flow of people that really don't know much about sports getting on there and providing their input. At least with the Saber and any of the other sports message boards, a lot of the fan base really knew what they really knew sports when they came into that. Yeah. So even if it was a split discussion, it was a more educated discussion. Now they just see, like, if, you know, Kihei gets, you know, three turnovers in a game and doesn't score much, they're just all over him. And it makes no sense, because a point guard or a quarterback can only be as good as the surrounding players on his team in terms of their execution. They can't make everything happen. So if you've got a new team, and in our case in basketball, we had a real change in terms of the lineup this last year. So many new faces, two transfers that had never played the defensive intensity that's required here.
Yeah.
That right there gives pause for a point guard to be able to say, no, their player is going to be where he's supposed to be. So that instinct, that ability to make things happen in a split second was taken away from Kihei. It's not the same as when he had Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, and DeAndre Hunter and Momedy in there. Those guys knew basketball. They knew exactly where to be on the floor. They were very cohesive as a team. And that allowed Kihei to be the best he could be. I don't think what happened with Kihei last year is all on Kihei by any stretch. I think anytime that he had a difficult game, you could look in other areas to say, well, he wasn't getting the help he needed. But
here's another question for you. The pulse of Virginia after a national championship, like you hear people say, oh, there's a grace after you win a national title, everything changes. There's this grace period. Have you seen that? Have you felt a different energy or vibe from Virginia fans post 2019 championship? Obviously we had COVID and all that, but
absolutely. I mean, obviously one of the biggest knocks on Virginia athletics over the years was, we're never going to win a national championship in basketball and football because the deck is stacked against us. Right. And the deck is stacked against us. Let's just be honest with that. Our players actually have to study. Our players have to get through school. It's not like some schools, and I won't call them out, you know, in certain conferences where they will just pass them until they're ready to move on to the NBA or whatever. And then you'll see it hurts their graduation rates on the back end. But with Virginia, to be able to achieve the national championship in basketball, remove that stigma. And honestly, I think it made Coach Bennett the best coach in the country. I think that the moment he did that, well, I'll take it back. 2014, when Tony Bennett beat Krzyzewski with one of his best Duke teams ever in the ACC title game, I think that's when the reins changed. I think that's when Coach Krzyzewski handed the reins of best coach in college basketball right to Tony Bennett. But in terms of the pulse, yeah, people got really, really excited. It was like, wow, you know, we can win a national championship without having to get, you know, 5, 6, 7 McDonald's All-Americans on the same team. Yeah. And I think this is a story that will continue. There'll be some ups and downs, just like there are with any program. But I think we're going to see some more Final Fours and maybe even some more championships before Tony Bennett is done. Yeah. But the one thing, there's a double-edged sword to that, too. It raises expectations, Now, once you've won that national championship, if you're not getting back to the Final Four the next year, there's a tremendous amount of criticism. We saw that happen with the Ralph years in basketball. We saw that happen after the Welsh years and after, Al Groh started to taper off a little bit with football. That level of expectation that people were used to bowl games or people were used to Final Fours, and when they weren't getting them anymore. It can be a double-edged sword. Achieving so much just brings that level of expectation up, but that's a good problem to have.
And on that note, you spoke of academics and the real struggle. Like, you have to find, it's kind of like lightning in a bottle for Virginia, that recipe. Is it doable? Do you think it's doable in football with so many moving parts and football the way that it's structured today? I mean, that it's so top heavy with the BCS and all of that. Is the national title something that fans should be thinking about, or is that
you know, it's a tough one. Well, I don't know. Virginia has had teams capable of winning it all in the past. Yes, 1989 and 90, Virginia had one of the best teams in the country, hands down.
Yep.
The 1990 team with Sean Moore and Herman Moore before Sean hurt his thumb, yep, and before Bruce McGonigal supposedly fell down that construction site. That team was destined to go all the way. And the team that beat them with a last second field goal won the national championship.
Right.
Georgia Tech from the ACC. Right. So yes, it is possible. And I'll tell you why. You got to have the right kind of coach that can see the talent that can be, what's the right word for it? You get guys that are three-star players that you can coach up. Heath Miller came in as a three-star quarterback. He is a Hall of Fame NFL tight end. Matt Schaub came in and really, really struggled for 2 years, and he came out and ended up being an NFL quarterback. And if I'm not mistaken, is he still with Atlanta? So I think Virginia will have a better chance once it becomes more of a tournament type of atmosphere. If we can get up to 16 teams, I know it's a while, long time coming, but if we could get up to 16 teams vying for a national title in football, that opens the door up to where your LSU or your Clemson might get knocked off earlier and really level the playing field. That's what happens in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
UVA destined to win it all in 2018. And they go out round one, horribly to a team. Now, that was a good basketball team that they lost to, but still, had they gotten through that game, who knows? Final Four bound, you know? So you never know what can happen, but when you only have four teams vying for it,
yeah,
you can't get into that picture. But I think it's doable, but it's not something that's going to be like a Clemson or Alabama where it's every other year. It's one of those things where it's going to be maybe every 10 years is a shot. You know what I mean? So
we just have to be in place. Yeah. It's kind of
All the cards got to fall into place, but I think there needs to be a little bit greater number of teams that are vying for that playoff atmosphere to make it a real opportunity.
But you're right about the success breeding expectations, Mike, because I have a certain acceptance of football's, I don't want to say mediocrity, but slightly above averageness. Like, I'm expecting really big things from the basketball team, but from the football team, my standard that makes me happy is a much lower, and consequently I can enjoy some of these games a little bit more. Yeah. Because hey, we're in it, we're, you know. And instead, versus basketball, where I'm sitting there like, why is this only a 5-point game, why is this only a 10-point game, we should be blowing these guys out and just getting pissed. Because
I'm with you on that. For me, I think what the level of expectation for the football program should be, 8 or 9 wins a year with a bowl game. And you know what? We were getting that with George Welch, and we got it for so many years in a row that people got tired of George Welch. And it wasn't until after George was gone that people realized what we had.
Right.
We had a strong football program that could compete with anybody. They wouldn't be playing for a national championship, but they would win 9 games. You know, a 9-2 season is good, really good. With the level of talent, you know, out, I mean, you can't expect to win every single game. I mean, you know, even the Alabamas and Clemsons, you know, even they expect to win them, but it's hard to do. There are near misses with those teams once or twice a year where, what was it? Syracuse darn near knocked off Clemson that one game earlier in the year. Had they done that, they may not have been playing for the national championship that year.
That's right.
So you gotta be a little lucky too.
Yeah. So we had the lockdown podcast, T-Cub and Ball Hawk run it. They had John Gamble on yesterday. I had no idea his story. Pretty incredible that he did what he did, but he was an integral part of building them to that number one team. It came with hard work, grind. Like it's the recipe is there, but it was like, he came in with that attitude and helped those guys grind and become stronger, better, faster.
We had key players on that team that helped them win. They did not come out of high school with the credentials that you would think. A friend of mine, Timmy Morris, who I played at Charlottesville High School with my 11th grade year, he was the center on that team. And Timmy was very undersized, not a high level recruit coming out, but he was the starting center on the number one team in the country. So George Welsh, hands down, one of the best coaches that's ever coached college football. The coaches that he'd surrounded himself with were ahead of their time. Gary Tranquil, for instance, the offensive coordinator, was way ahead of his time. He was doing triple option and some of the things that you're seeing with, you know, Clemson and, you know, the run pass option. I don't even know if that term existed back then. He was inventing the stuff. Yes, it helps to have a Sean Moore and a Herman Moore and a Tiki Barber. Terry Kirby on the team. But there were a lot of other integral parts of that team. You have to have depth. You have to have depth at two, you know, you have to have a second level of depth on your team. You know, you can't have just the first string. You have to have a second string that's pretty good too, or you can't win in football. It's not like basketball where you can have maybe six or seven guys that are really, really good. Duke has proven that over the years. Yeah. But in football, you need about 40 guys really to really make it work and get there. And you have to coach up that second string. And Welsh did that like no other. I think Bronco's getting there. I think he's putting in place the players that he needs to fit this style. And I think we're going to see a consistent winner out of that. I don't know about national championship, but he's already played for a ACC championship game, which I don't think anybody thought of it was on the horizon anytime soon. I was down there for that. That was a great first quarter.
there was Pete Gillen. I remember when it was the Pete Gillen era and we were losing, I remember thinking if we could just get every once in a while, get to the Sweet 16, I would be very, very happy. If like, you know, every 4 years you get to the Sweet 16 and then maybe you're in the bubble of some years, but like, and then every 10 years you get a shot at the Final Four. Like that's kind of where my head was with basketball and football. I was similar. I was like, hey, if we can just kind of be bowl eligible most years and then every once in a while win an ACC championship. But national title for me in football has never been even in the, that just wasn't something I was like, yeah, we can, that's going to happen. It just doesn't feel right.
For me, the hope, like where I got excited was like a New Year's Day game, not a BC game. And maybe this is because that predates that, but just, you know, you don't want to play on December 22nd. Yeah. You give me that January 1st game. That tells you you've made it. A national championship was never in consideration.
Yeah. And probably basketball, it was like, if I get to the final four for me was it. Like I cried like a baby when we beat Purdue just because I was like, that felt like a national title to me. Like it was just like the final four. Like that's what you dream about.
TW, I don't know if you thought like I did, was there was a lot of, I guess you would call it national pressure on Tony Bennett. You know, is he a Hall of Fame coach? Well, he's never been to a Final Four. I think that monkey, I mean, he did it in the locker room, the monkey off the back, right? That was the greatest scene I think I've ever seen from Tony.
Yeah.
Going in there with that monkey on his back and the whole team just going crazy.
Yeah.
But that's true. That was the thing that, in my opinion, I always knew he was a great coach, but that catapulted him into that era of, you know, Dean Smith, yep. Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski, the great ones. And not only has he become a great one, I know I sound a little bit biased, but I don't think there's a better college basketball coach in the country right now over the last 7 years, to be honest with you.
Yeah. The thing that's different with him is doing it the right way. And Dean Smith early on was absolutely incredible and all of that. Coach K has done a magical thing, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, but they're cheating. So it's a different ball game. That's probably not true, but it's how it feels. With Tony Bennett, we're like, this guy is doing it the right way. And it's just amazing. In the time where, you know, it's so easy to, you know, take some shortcuts. He's not. He's. We've seen it all. Everybody's been a part of it. It's incredible, and like that. Well, makes I think, it
yeah, even we've all heard stories on why they've lost certain recruits.
Yes.
And
oh yeah.
So you know they're not willing to play that game.
Yeah.
I can name you two in 1 year: Ed Davis and Patrick Patterson. We all know why Tubby Smith left Kentucky, and Patrick Patterson committed immediately when he left. They told Tubby, we want you to do some certain things to make sure you can secure these big men. And his exact quote was, I left because they were asking me to do things I didn't feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And I think we all know what that means. And Nike, the AAU platform and some of the people that run that had great influence on a lot of players that were going to North Carolina. And I think that hurt us quite a bit. But then again, in my opinion, if a player won't come to you because, he's not being, driven there by Nike, maybe that's not the player we need anyway in our program. So we managed, Lato eventually left. I liked Dave and everything. I liked some of the styles of what he did, but he wasn't the greatest fit for UVA. But it led us to Tony. And, we don't get to Tony without Pete Gillen and Dave Lato. We just don't. Yeah. So it's part of the process. And, I can appreciate that.
Yeah. I remember the end of the Jeff Jones era. There was it was rough. Obviously, there was a lot of losing in the last couple of seasons. But it was always like, hey, why can't we recruit? Jeff Jones started it, recruiting these high level guys, but we still played a fairly slow pace. I remember people thinking, why can't we have a run and gun style? And Pete Gillen comes in and does it. And then it was a disaster. And people are like, we need to go back and have a tough minded coach. And then Lato comes in and it's so that. And we didn't like that either.
I know, right?
And then it's like we over adjusted. And then we landed on Tony Bennett. So, yeah, I kind of agree with that.
I'll be the first to admit I will accept any style as long as it's winning. I will learn to love
a winning style. That's fair.
And there's a lot of fans in college basketball still in denial about that. They watch Virginia and they sneer and they say, well, it's awful basketball. How could you enjoy it? Whereas if that guy was running their program and they were winning games, they would be quite happy.
Right. And then I think that's true with winning. If you buy into any style, if the players buy into it and they play and they work towards it, it probably is going to be successful. Like, right? It's like if you all buy into whatever style it is, running gun, trap, whatever, if you have the players and they all buy into it and they play as one, that style will work. So that's what's fun about college basketball.
Yeah. You know what basketball is supposed to be, though, is what Tony Bennett is doing. It's what Terry Holland and Jeff Jones were doing as well. Defense, ball movement, protection of the ball, and take a good shot.
Yeah.
That's what basketball is. John Wooden would probably be just jumping for joy to see how Tony Bennett coaches his teams.
Yeah.
And I will say this, though, it has ruined how I watch other college basketball teams play. I get so frustrated when they'll just run and gun, ball goes out of bounds, or somebody's not where they're supposed to be, or they're taking a shot with three guys on them. And it makes me really appreciate how efficient Virginia is.
Yeah.
And you know what? And it's going to help those basketball players as they move on, not only in life, that type of not just efficiency, but discipline, but moving on to the NBA. And I think that's why you're seeing guys, you know, like Joe Harris and Anthony Gill and Mamadi and well, Ty was going to be great no matter what I think, but you know, all these guys are going to succeed and continue to get better and better because of the program. Yeah. And it's great. It's the way basketball should be played. And, you know, if you go back and look at some of the Jeff Jones era games when it was Corey Alexander and Curtis Staples and Jay Will and all those guys, go back and watch one of those games if you can find them on YouTube or whatever, and watch how similar it is to how we play now. It's not like this is a brand new concept of playing defense first and slowing the ball down. Yeah. Carolina used to, they get 10 minutes left in the second half and they would go four corners and just slow the whole game down to a crawl. That they're the one, they're the North Carolina, the most run and gun team of the last 20 years is the reason we have a shot clock.
Right.
So think about that for a second.
Yeah. So, Dean, that's what Dean Smith, the kind of mirrors what Tony Bennett has done, right? He couldn't get the talent like Ralph Sampson. He negated it by slowing down the game and then playing four corners and then built it up and started recruiting the elite level talent.
Yep.
So it's really interesting to see us taking that and how UNC fans bash Virginia for playing that style, which is
right. Well, Jones teams used to play very physical defense too. And I think our physicality is different these days, but it's still a physical defensive game.
The one thing I've noticed about our players, or at least over the last, probably since the, you know, Brogdon Gill era, is the mental toughness. And obviously I think that comes from Tony. The supporting coaching staff like Jay Will and those other guys, Richie McKay, when he was here, they come from an era of like a mental toughness era. And that really translates, or by osmosis, so to speak, into the players. And, you know, a perfect example of that is how they dealt with the loss to UMBC. And I know this has been, you know, gone over a million times, but.
Yeah. Ty, actually stop there for a minute. Talk to us about what the heck happened on this. How is there anyone left on the Sabre? How did you not ban everyone after the loss to UMBC? Did you?
You got to keep in mind. I sold the Sabre many, many, many years ago. And in 2005, 2006, I moved up into the parent company to be the chief technology officer and the ad campaign manager for Sports War, the 30-something website thing that we had. So I had a choice. Mike, you can move up in the parent company and have a chance of being a millionaire, or you can continue to run the Sabre for the rest of your life. Well, you don't get too many opportunities to be the next, you know, internet entrepreneur. So I took that chance. Well, when that folded, it left me kind of hanging because I'd already hired Chris Wright and Chris Horn to run it. Yep. And, you know, after a number of years, you know, as I talked to you about before, we started to tank a little bit with advertising and stuff. There just wasn't a place there for me anymore. And I had to leave. And so as of 2014, I was not working full time.
You weren't doing anything with Sabre.
No, I was just shooting photography. So I didn't have a hand in that. I wasn't managing the message boards anymore or doing any of that kind of stuff. So I didn't have to deal with it. I didn't have to worry about that. It was really disappointing to see them lose that game. I mean, it was a kick in the gut for every fan. I mean, here we were, number one seed, ready to go. Definitely the best team in the country, hands down. And to have that shock. But where the mental toughness comes into play is these guys use this as a motivating factor to work in the off season with each other so well that when they came back, there was no denying these guys. And you could see that in the last three games they played in the NCAA tournament, which were just ridiculous endings. And the first game, how many points did they go down first round where it looked like, oh gosh, here it is again.
Yeah, like 14, right?
14. And I don't know what the conversations were between Ty and Kyle, but they got it back together right before halftime and went on to just, run the table and win it all. Yeah. I never thought at any time throughout that NCAA tournament that they were going to lose. The way they beat Syracuse late in the year and Louisville, where they were down by double digits in the second half, and they just shrugged it off like it was like, ah, we'll just come back and beat them anyway. That mental toughness, I don't think there's any other team I've ever seen had that kind of mental toughness. Usually when you're down by 12 or 14 points to another really good top 25 ACC team, you're going to lose. They came back, they were down, 16 points to Syracuse and came back and beat them by double digits by the end of the second half. Yeah. That's why I knew they were never going to lose, no matter how far they got behind in the NCAA tournament. I said, they're going to find a way. And I think Kyle actually mentioned that in the Unbelievable special.
Yeah,
he kept selling himself. No, we're not going down like this. They just refused to lose, and that's why they won it all. Yeah, it's impressive.
Still one of the most clutch things I've ever witnessed. Absolutely. At the end of Auburn.
I remember after the UMBC loss, the reverse. People were chirping about the reverse, right? It was like, UVA, this is not mentally tough. All the players they recruit are soft, and they don't have a dog, and they don't have a fight in them, and all of that. Like that. Remember that was the story after UMBC. It was like,
oh absolutely,
right. And then,
I never for once believed that. I mean, I was, you know, I shot photography for that 2014 ACC title run, where we beat Jabari Parker and one of the best Duke teams that Coach Krzyzewski's ever fielded. And we may not have beaten them by a lot, but we beat them toe to toe all game long. And you could just feel it. Malcolm Brogdon, Anthony Gill, they never had a look on their face that they were ever going to lose that game. This is ours. And that's straight up mental toughness. I mean, and look where they are now. You know, I mean, Malcolm hit a home run right out of the gate, which is one of the, you know, aside from Ralph Sampson, one of the only times we've ever seen that from a UVA player. But, you know, look at Anthony Gill and look what Joe, the process they had to go through to get where they are now. Yeah. And now they're very strong key contributors to their team. You can't get there without just a natural mental toughness.
Yeah.
And but you know what, that's what makes that turnaround story so special. That's why, you know, so many people that weren't even UVA fans in the media, and actually critics of UVA, came out and said it's the best story in all of sports, not just college sports, not just USA sports, all of sports.
Absolutely.
And I'm almost kind of glad they lost the way they did in 2018, because it made it so much better. I get chills up my spine just talking about it.
It is the best story in sports. I mean, it has everything, the drama. Is there any word if ESPN's going to do a full 30 for 30? I mean, I know we got the Unbelievable, but that was produced a little bit differently. Are we going to get like a full 30 for 30?
They don't do 30 for 30s. I think they need at least 15 years between the event and the 30 for 30, I think is what they said. They need some time for it to breathe before. I don't know if it's 15 or 20 or whatever it is. So,
Wow.
Yeah, there's going to be a little bit before we get that kind of documentary. So
I can watch that Unbelievable documentary anytime. It's an easy thing.
Yeah. I mean, we also gave you a little insight into how we think. We have, because Grant and some others who went out and bought that monkey, and we have that make and model of monkey. We're just deciding what we want to do with it. We have a bunch of them, and we're just trying to figure out how do we want to use this moving forward. And they don't make it anymore, so we have that special edition, same one that Tony Bennett used on his back. So we've got a bunch of those. We got to figure out how we're going to use it, but we'll play around with that one. And then another thing I was gonna mention, Mike. Now you're no longer a part of the Saber. We talked yesterday a little bit. You've got some photographs. And I know you've talked about, hey, you struggled with not being a part of the UVA family. We'd absolutely love you to be a part of our family, and maybe offer some of your photo capsules. And I don't want to give too much away, but we're working on some things with you that I think the fans are going to love. The longtime fans are going to love. And it'll help you because I know you mean a lot to the Virginia and the Charlottesville community. So we want to make sure you feel welcomed and loved. So be on the lookout for that, everyone. That's all I can say.
Well, I appreciate that. I will bring as much as I can to what you guys are trying to achieve. It certainly it warms my heart to be, you know, have an opportunity to get back involved in some type of fan and media capacity with these programs because I miss it. I mean, I ran the Sabre for 2 years out of pocket and then another 16 years after that. I mean, it's hard to believe 18 years on a web venture is a lifetime.
Yeah.
And to be able to, you know, even though I'm not running it, it's still my legacy. It's still something I'm very, very proud of.
Yeah.
The fact that it's still out there and the people that I hired to run it are doing a great job with it still.
Yeah.
That means a lot to me. The fans have always been very, very supportive. There's been a loyalty there that I didn't think that you could even have in an internet venture. So it was a lot of fun. It was certainly worth doing. I pay the price a little bit now for it. I stopped getting my 4-year degree to start that venture. And, you know, now it's a little harder to get good jobs now without that 4-year or 5-year degree. But I wouldn't change one bit of it. I would have, knowing everything that I know now, I would have gone the same route all over.
Yeah, no, we don't even look. I don't know what your take is on it, but people think, oh, Ocker Max is competition with Sabre. I'm like, competition? What are you talking about? Like, Sabre is part of UVA. It's not a, we're trying to.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a couple different message board tabs that I load up, and you know it's always Locker Room Access and the Sabre. I mean, those are the two that I'm always coming back to. There's a handful of others that I check, but I mean, you know where the good info is. Mike, I wanted to ask you, so you do sports photography?
If it wasn't for COVID, this would have been my 23rd year shooting professionally for Virginia Athletics.
Oh, nice. Nice, because I was photo editor for the Camp Daily when I was in school. And the only reason I joined photo is because I wanted to be able to shoot basketball games. And I got to shoot, a lot of football games, a lot of women's basketball games, saw some incredible stuff. That ACC tournament, the triple overtime game, I think. So I've spent a lot of time at the baseline. Junior Burroughs, if you go on Twitter, check Junior Burroughs' Twitter page. His cover photo is him dunking on a guy that I took.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow. How long ago was that, buddy?
I graduated in 95.
Okay. So you were shooting. Wait, you were shooting UVA before I was.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't get to shoot my very first. Yep. 98 was when I got press credentials. And I was shooting film on a $300 Canon Elon II camera with a with the 200mm lens fixed, not the 70-200 like I have now, but and that's what I was shooting with. And you know, tout my horn a little bit, I got one of the most epic shots in UVA history the very first year, which was the great comeback with the Mod Hawkins sliding into the end zone for that touchdown.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, nice. I mean that was pretty special.
Yeah, I had my own camera body. I had an EOS Elan. I had the first EOS Elan, but autofocus wasn't a thing we used during sports because it was way too slow back then. Yeah, and I'm shooting black and white, you know, 1600 or 3200 ISO in football games. It's just such a different game. Like, I would kill for like the fast autofocus we have now.
Oh man, you remember shooting in U-Haul even before they upgraded the lighting in U-Haul. Right around the time Adam Hall and T. Watt and all those guys came in, that's when they upgraded the lighting. So that was what, year 2000, 2001, somewhere around in that time frame. I was shooting the 98, 99 games, and I had to get an 85mm fixed lens that was 1.8 f-stop just to allow any light at all to come in, because anybody that was shooting in there was either shooting black and white at like 1600 ISO, or they had a remote in the, I don't know if you remember the strobe remotes.
Yeah. See, that's right. The thing. The color, the guys that were shooting color always had access to the strobes. We were just shooting black and white. We didn't get the strobes. So yeah, you're shooting 1600, you know, I was shooting a 50, a 1.8 aperture, 2/1000th of a second. And that's how I learned basketball, because I had to be able to predict the action. I had to know where the ball was going, as opposed to trying to follow it, because you're trying to focus before the ball gets there. And and that really developed my love for the game.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different genres of photography. Landscape's probably the easiest because you have your light. Sports is one of the most difficult ones. I'm now into astrophotography right now, which is, in my opinion, probably the most difficult thing to ever shoot, because of the way you have to stack photography and stuff and do it. But all the great photos from that era, you know, the Ralph era of the 80s and all the way up until pretty much until we got into John Paul Jones Arena. If you weren't shooting on strobe, you didn't have a shot that you could really print as an 8x10. It was impossible. And there were only two strobes. The Daily Progress had one and Media Relations had the other. And you had to sign up ahead of time to get the strobe from Media Relations. But they weren't going to give that to VirginiaBasketball.com at the time. That was going to go to the Roanoke Times or to the Richmond Times Dispatch or somebody. And then the toughest thing is you're trying to get that dunk from Adam Hall coming in and you're like, all right, I got this shot. Right. And you're going, and I think my thing was 3 frames a second or something like that. And you're going click, 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 which means one of your shots is going to be good if you're lucky with the autofocus. And then somebody hits that strobe and blows your shot completely out. Yeah. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Oh, it was so frustrating.
We would take back the film and develop it ourselves, and so then you're laying it out on the light table, and you just see those frames immediately that are blown out, that are dark. Like you just know, like, well, that was the shot.
Well, see, you had something I didn't have because I didn't have a photo studio like that could develop my own film. I had to wait until Monday, or you know, if it was a weekend game, to go take my film to Stubblefields. And then pick them up the next day on contact sheets with my negatives. And then I would have to look through these tiny little photos on the contact sheets to pick which ones I think I wanted and run them through a negative scanner, which was SCSI 2. That's how old that was. That was on the same computer that had my zip drive.
So when I started, so I mean, we bulk loaded our own film, we developed it, and then we made prints. That got glued down onto the flats. You had a waxing machine, you glued the prints down on the flats, and then that got sent to Culpeper for printing. Last year, we actually had our first negative scanner that took like a minute to scan a negative. Made a hell of a lot of noise, and the software was black and white only, I think. But that was just so much better. Like I sound like a dinosaur. But there's something about working in a dark room that's really relaxing. Like it's a process, and I found it enjoyable. I do kind of miss that.
The kids today are like probably thinking they're probably talking about an Android phone.
Well, the folks at Cavalier. Was Cav Daily, and even Media Relations. They're all shooting with Canon EOS 1DX. Mark twos, Mark threes now. I finally got a hold of a Mark IV, EOS Mark IV. I guess it was 2019 towards the end of the basketball season. And I used to borrow them from Media Relations or from Andrew Shirtlift for the bigger games, like the ACC tournament games and stuff, or the big Carolina game or Duke game, you know, at JPJ. I was still getting by with my Mark II pretty well. A lot of my great shots are from the Mark I and the Mark II. But now that I've got that Mark IV, man, you can jack that thing up to 3,200 ISO and have almost virtually no noise. And, man, I tell you, and JPJ has good lighting on top of that. So it was like night and day going from U-Haul to JPJ. It was, it was like, oh my God, the sun's out.
Yeah.
Totally. What's that?
I'd love to be able to try to shoot a game these days, you know, instead of having to load film and worry about like running out of film in the middle of trying to get your shots. And
we'll get a press pass.
Like 5 or 10 rolls a game, and depending on how big the game was. What's that?
I said, we're going to try to get a press pass and have you and Mike shoot a game. How about that? That'd be cool.
I haven't shared the story. So real quick before we wrap up, I actually spent a day as a sketch artist for the Supreme Court because I went to a Supreme Court case with the Cav Daily. They don't allow photographers into the actual court proceedings. So I had to sign in as a sketch artist and I had a sketch artist name tag. So I spent the time listening to oral arguments and drawing stick figures on a notebook.
So everyone was stick figure.
That's awesome. Yeah, everyone was stick figures. I'm not a good artist, but that was how I was a Supreme Court sketch artist.
Oh, that's incredible. That's awesome.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to hear more from you. Obviously, we hope to bring you on and work on a different projects here and there, Mike. So fans, look out for that. Look out for more coming from Mike and Phony. We'll catch up next week.
Sounds good. Go Hoos.
All right, guys. Take care. Go Hoos. Yep.